Welcome back to Zephyr News, a weekly production of FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. Zephyr News is broadcast each Thursday evening from 7 to 7:30 p.m. This week's show features a contribution from the California Report. Segments from KZFR community members include an update on Ronnie Dean Stout, the man responsible for the park fire, by Maddie Minucci, a CalMatters segment on telematics and auto insurance by David Foos, coverage of the planned reopening of Paradise Elementary by Maddie Minucci, and a recap of the Butte County Supervisors meeting by David Foos.
This is Maddie Vinucci with Zephyr News. The grand reopening of Paradise Elementary School is scheduled for July 30th at 1 p.m. At 1:30, there will be a ribbon-cutting ceremony. There will also be ice cream provided by Auto Construction and tours of the school to follow. There is still a lot of work to be done, but it is time to celebrate the reopening of Paradise Elementary School, Superintendent Betsy Amos said. It's all very exciting. We have a lot of community members who feel very connected to Paradise Elementary School. When we had our groundbreaking, it was our biggest groundbreaking of all the school sites. Paradise Elementary School will welcome over 220 students ranging from transitional kindergarten to sixth grade on August 12th. The school will consist of two classroom wings, a transitional kindergarten and kindergarten wing, a fully functioning kitchen which sits behind a multi-purpose room with an administration office, and what Superintendent Amos calls a cafe-gymatorium. We should celebrate the fact that we did accomplish what we wanted to. We're going to have this campus open, Vice President Richard Gendry said. It's going to relieve a lot of stress on the other elementary campus that's down here in Paradise. This campus was built in about a year. Due to the speed of the construction, there were additional costs. Facilities Maintenance and Operations Director Jake Tim presented to the board. The district has entered a lease-back agreement with Auto Construction, providing for the construction of Paradise Elementary School Phase 1. Auto proposed a total cost of $30,997,000 for this project. The total cost consists of $28,153,500 for direct construction, $2,139,666 for contractor's fees, and $703,834 for contingency costs. This proposal was accepted by the board. Auto Construction now proposes change order number 3. The change order amount is $396,479. Studio W, the district's architect, has confirmed that the stated costs are objectively verifiable and the rationale for the cost is sound. Board approval is required. Tim also read a written statement by Trustee Bill Sherritt, who could not be present at the meeting. Regarding Paradise Elementary School, he read, "Just a reminder that the construction committee, with Bill Sherritt's recommendation, recommended the school board should move forward with Paradise Elementary School without the final DSA plans. In his opinion, it was the only way to have the school complete for the 26-27 school year. We were using previously approved plans from other sites. When the final plans were approved, construction codes had been updated. These changes have added costs to the project, as well as unforeseen problems in the construction. There have been more change orders than usual, and obviously a higher contract price. Auto Construction has done a great job helping us to mitigate these costs." The PUSD board unanimously approved the Paradise Elementary School Phase 1 Project Change Order No. 3 in the amount of $396,479 as presented. The additional costs are due to the fact that the elementary school moved ahead with construction despite not having approval from the Division of State Architect for a portion of the build, President Melissa Crick explained. "I would argue if we waited another year, we would have more chaos on our other campus. I think we would have had stress levels with our other teachers and administration that we don't need," Gendry said. "I think the project would have cost us more if we waited another year to do it. We all knew that our community needed another elementary school. We didn't realize how bad," Tim said. The projection of an average 15% per year of increased costs, that $30 million, the 15% thereof is far more than $396,000, said Board President Melissa Crick. Auto Construction is adding their finishing touches to the site before the teachers start decorating their classrooms. The board all stated their excitement for Paradise Elementary School to reopen after nearly 8 years. For Zephyr News, this has been Maddie Vinucci.
This is David Foose for Zephyr News. This report is based on a story in Cal Matters by Levi Sumagese. A bill to allow insurance companies to monitor California drivers' behavior in exchange for potential discounts on their premiums would change the state's long-standing insurance law, drawing opposition from the insurance department as well as consumer and privacy advocates. Assembly Bill 311 would let insurance companies use telematics, that is, technology installed in vehicles that allows them to transmit information such as location, speed, braking force, swerving, and more, when setting rates for drivers who choose to allow themselves to be tracked. California is the only state in the nation that does not allow insurers to use telematics in setting rates. State law requires insurers to prioritize safety record, miles driven, and driving experience as the main factors when they set drivers' premiums. The bill would let drivers choose to use telematics data to establish their driving records in addition to what the Department of Motor Vehicle records show. Telematics data is collected by smartphone app, systems embedded in vehicles, or other connected technology. Supporters say the legislation would make streets and highways safer by encouraging better driving, while opponents worry about privacy, lack of transparency, and possible bias in insurance pricing. The bill's author, Assemblymember Tina McKinnor, a Democrat from Inglewood, said at the committee hearing that she has lost 3 friends in vehicle crashes in the past several years. She called telematics a tool to help make streets safer, saying her bill would incentivize safer, good driving behavior. Safer Streets for Everyone, a nonprofit organization advocating for road safety, co-sponsored the legislation. The group's founder and executive director, Damian Kevitt, is a cyclist who was hit by a car and lost his leg. He testified before the committee, citing a couple of studies that show drivers improved their behavior, including reducing their use of mobile phones while behind the wheel when financial rewards were involved. Both studies were backed by the insurance industry. None of the proponents who testified recently before 2 Senate committees advanced the bill mentioned any independent studies around whether telematics has helped improve safety. Other supporters of the bill include several road safety coalitions and bicycle associations from around the state. The state's insurance department is opposed to the bill, saying the legislation is not compatible with California insurance law, Proposition 103. The law came out of a ballot proposition written by Harvey Rosenfeld, the founder of consumer advocacy group Consumer Watchdog, in response to rising car and home insurance premiums almost 4 decades ago. It was approved by 51% of the state's voters in 1988 and includes a mandate for insurance companies to give good drivers 20% discounts. Some drivers also receive discounts for low mileage. It's a form of monitoring that's okay under Prop 103 because miles driven is an allowed factor in rate setting. The bill creates broad liability loopholes, dilutes regulator oversight, and allows insurance companies to shift core regulatory responsibilities to unregulated third-party telematics vendors, among other concerns, wrote Josephine Figueroa, Deputy Insurance Commissioner and Legislative Director for the Department, to Senator Steve Padilla, Chairperson of the Senate Insurance Committee, on June 20th. Figueroa wrote that the bill contains vague language about how insurance companies are supposed to do due diligence around third-party telematics providers and using telematics data as part of drivers' records. She said the insurance department has documented cases where facially neutral criteria provide disparate impacts, such as the use of census tract voter registration rates as a proxy for race or citizenship. In addition, she said consumer savings also remain generally unproven and varied. California's Senate Insurance Committee passed the bill 4 days after Figueroa's letter. This is David Foos for Zephyr News.
This is Maddie Vannucci with Zephyr News. Ronnie Dean Stout II was convicted of deliberately setting the park fire by Judge Kristen Lucena on Friday. Stout is scheduled to be sentenced October 9th. Stout started this fire by intentionally pushing his car into a ravine on July 24th, 2024, starting the fourth largest wildfire California has ever seen. The park fire burned 429,603 acres across Butte and Tehama counties, with 713 structures destroyed, including 427 homes, according to the DA press release and CAL FIRE. Stout was convicted of intentional arson, which was his third strike under California's three strikes rule, resulting in Stout facing 25 years to life in prison. Stout received his first strike after a child molestation conviction in 2001 and a theft conviction in 2002. On the morning of July 24, 2024, witnesses noted that they saw Stout drunkenly harassing people at the Bear Hole swimming area in Upper Park, according to the press release. They later saw Stout drive his 2007 Toyota Yaris, speeding and recklessly down the dirt and gravel Upper Park Road back toward Chico. Later, Stout's vehicle slid off the road and over a dirt berm 60 feet above the gully near Big Chico Creek. Stout revved his engine and his tires spun in high grass and brush near the berm, witnesses testified according to the DA's office press release. CAL FIRE Battalion Chief Matt Palade, the lead arson investigator, testified that his investigation found heat from the vehicle ignited the dry grass and brush beneath it. The trial was mainly focused on the credibility of key witness Elizabeth Fox. Fox was the only witness who testified to seeing Stout push his car down the hill from the Upper Park Road and ultimately to a roadside berm, according to Steve Schoonover with Enterprise Record. The defense belabored the idea that Fox was an unreliable witness because she had made assumptions about the events leading up to the park fire and told both investigators and posted them on TikTok, according to Schoonover. Public defender Nicole Diamond cited Fox's admitted mental health issues, post-traumatic stress from being burned out by the campfire, and the fact that she was at the park to recover from an argument with her ex-husband as further proof that Fox was unreliable. Other witnesses, Allison Aresman and Andrew Payton, saw the fire start and Stout get out of the car. At this point, all three witnesses saw him standing in the road with his hands on his head and get back in and out of the car, according to Schoonover. From here, Aresman and Payton became distracted, which is when Fox watched Stout push his car down the hill. When Aresman looked back to where Stout had been, the car and Stout were gone, according to Schoonover. Judge Lucena praised the everyday citizens who came forward and found the defendant acted with the intent required for a willful arson conviction. With the trial phase concluded, the Butte County District Attorney Mike Ramsey noted that at Stout's October sentencing, his office will present victim impact statements to the judge from residents of Butte, Tehama, and Shasta counties who suffered damage, evacuation, or trauma from the fire, according to the Butte County District Attorney press release. Ramsey invited those victims to submit their victim impact statements to his office by emailing those statements to parkfireimpact@buttecounty.ca.gov. Recording for Zephyr News, this is Maddie Vannucci.
This is David Foos reporting for Zephyr News. Butte County Clerk Recorder and Registrar of Voters Keaton Denley announced that the candidate filing period is open for the November 3rd, 2026 general election. There are 91 county positions up for election, but so far only 43 candidates total have filed to run. The deadline to file is 5 p.m. on August 7th, 2026. The Butte County Board of Supervisors met on Tuesday, July 28th. During supervisors' individual reports, Peter Durfee recommended that staff look at the parcel north of Chico containing the Centerfold Strip Club to see what the options are for redesignating the parcel for other purposes. Other supervisors agreed that the property is blighted and they don't want to see a strip club greeting visitors at the northern entrance to Butte County.
Maybe a head nod. We got an area in North Chico, it's right on Highway 99, that I think most people would consider some type of a blight. It's had criminal acts occur on it, up to and including a homicide just in the last couple of years. For me, this is the property that's a gateway to northern Butte County, as you're coming down Highway 99. And if I could just get a head nod, I'd like to maybe direct staff if they could look at additional potential conditional use permit changes or adjustments or possible zoning changes to include costs associated needed to redevelop that parcel for some type of a different use. And staff could, if they could also could include an option for a county-driven process for the redevelopment. And then just return to us at a later day with options and how we can move forward.
There were two public speakers. The first public speaker complained about negative side effects from COVID-19 vaccines and asked the supervisors why they are ignoring the issue. The second speaker asked for a full public accounting of PG&E settlement funds. The supervisors voted unanimously to approve a contract with Jinno Construction for building improvements to the Oroville and Chico Library branches. They also voted unanimously to approve a contract extension for Youth for Change. The supervisors unanimously approved an employment contract for the county chief administrative officer, also an amendment to the contract for the director of public works. Butte County District Attorney Mike Ramsey introduced a discussion about the Butte County Child Abuse Response Team, or CART, Child Interview Room, which is in County Administration Building in Oroville, and the processes involved with interviewing potential child victims of crimes. The idea, according to Ramsey, is to have soft interview rooms where children are comfortable speaking freely.
Now, the purpose of establishing the CART protocol was to reduce the number of interviews a child abuse victim had to undergo. Back in the early 90s, we were seeing that every kind of agency needed to have an interview to do their function. So what this meant was many times a child would have to repeat their sometimes awful story over, and then someone else would come for their purposes and talk, and then someone else. So we had this separate and repeat interviews of the children. We decided to use a single forensic child interview specialist to obtain an accurate account of what may have occurred in a child-friendly, non-leading, and legally defensive way. When we started the process, it kind of evolved, and certainly it has evolved over the years. The interview at that time, and was videotaped, now it's digitally taped, and live streamed remotely from the interview room with the child and the interview specialist to another room where all the involved team members are to hear what the child has to say. And the team members consult with the child interview specialist during breaks in the interview to ensure that all pertinent questions are asked by that one person. So we don't have, again, that serial interviews. And it's with a common goal of ensuring that the criminal process is fair, both to the victims, the children of the crime, and to the persons accused of crime.
District Attorney Ramsey said that over 700 children had been interviewed in the room during the past 5 years. The supervisors took a break to go downstairs and inspect the room. There were discussions about two telecommunication tower conditional use permits. One public speaker was opposed to the first tower. Representatives of the companies asked that there be no more continuances of appeals. The town of Paradise has added an upgraded fire engine at Paradise Fire Station 82, which is located near the intersection of Libby and Pearson Roads. The fire engine, which costs $750,000 and is operated by a three-person crew, has a 500-gallon water tank and can deliver 1,500 gallons of water per minute. It also has a shortened wheelbase for a tighter turning radius and multi-view cameras. The engine was paid for with funds from local Measure V. The Chico Housing Action Team, or CHAT, announced that in partnership with the Golden Valley Bank, it has received a $1.14 million Affordable Housing Program, or AHP, general fund grant from the Federal Home Loan Bank in San Francisco. This funding supports the development of Builders Village, a 61-unit, fully accessible, permanent supportive housing community for disabled adults and seniors experiencing chronic homelessness in Butte County. A groundbreaking ceremony last Friday, July 24th, 2026, at the Feather River Boat Launch marked the beginning of the Oroville Wildlife Area Recreation Improvement Project. The $8 million project is a collaboration between the Department of Water Resources, or DWR, and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. The goal is to expand and enhance public access and outdoor facilities along the Feather River near Oroville. Work is expected to be completed late spring or early summer of 2027. Improvements will include a new concrete two-lane boat ramp, an improved gravel ramp for boats that are not trailered, a 25-unit primitive campground, a day-use picnic area, new recreational trails, plus paved parking, including spaces for trailers. Access to the Thermalito After Bay outlet will be restricted during construction. Boaters should consider other nearby boat ramps. Those using the Feather River for recreation are advised to use caution when in the area. This has been David Foose reporting for Zephyr News.
Good morning. This is the California Report. I'm Alex Hall in San Francisco. Close to 200 years ago, people from all over the world flocked to California's rivers in search of gold. This year, they're back at it, hoping that with the price of gold trending upward in the last year or so, they might just get lucky. But is it really that easy? KQED's Catherine Monahan went into the heart of the gold country, to the Yuba River, to talk to some old-time prospectors and some newbies.
Gold fever is a real thing.
Kobe Thomas is a sixth-generation gold miner. His great-great-great-grandfather came out with the California Gold Rush in 1849, and the family's been in the industry ever since.
It's so addictive. You just want to go do it again and again.
He digs up some promising-looking dirt from the riverbank and shakes it around in a special plastic pan.
The key is stratifying, getting the gold to go through all the way to the bottom, and then wash that white stuff off the top.
And after several minutes of careful swishing, a few glimmers start to reveal themselves.
Everything's fairly small. There's a lot of it.
Not far away, Thomas's friend Brian Puckett is finishing up his own pan. He swirled it down to specks of gold against a background of black sand.
Look at that. It's like a constellation of stars.
Puckett, by the way, is buck naked right now. as are some of the other characters lounging around this turquoise pool on the Yuba River.
And it's really a nice rhythm. You know, it's very relaxing.
But the atmosphere is changing on the river. After the price of gold shot up to an all-time record toward the beginning of this year and has been holding far above average ever since, Thomas says it's not just locals coming to pan anymore.
We see a lot more people out here, a lot more people getting into it.
I head to the local gold shop in Grass Valley, the Gold Digger Exchange, to see if any of the new prospectors are going in there to sell what they find. Owner Donald Seberg is standing behind glass display counters, full of bullion, jewelry, coins, and nuggets. He picks up a vial of that same sparkling dust that Thomas and Puckett were pulling out of the Yuba.
Yeah, and this is all from the miners, so it's probably a couple $1,000 in gold. So, yeah.
He says that's all just from the last few days, and that with the price so high, he meets new prospectors every week. Mm-hmm.
Some aren't really finding much, some are finding a lot. A lot of people quit and they go back to a real job. It's definitely hard work.
Zeeshan Khan walks into the gold shop. He's a delivery driver from Sacramento, and these days, he's buying gold.
Cash is burned. You know, you can burn it, it's gone, you know, but gold is there. It's physical. It's a mineral. I don't know.
Historically, gold tends to go up in price during times of economic instability. In late January, with global tariff whiplash and domestic inflation, it hit an all-time high of over $5,000 per ounce. Since then, with the conflict in Iran and disrupted trade routes, it's been hovering around $4,000, which is still about double what it was worth 2 years ago. I asked Khan if he started prospecting.
Oh, yeah, that's what I feel like doing all the time is go by the rivers and just shove my hand into the sand and see what I can find, you know. You can make money. People can make money, you know.
But can they really? Gene Ryan is a parks interpreter over at the Empire Mines State Historic Park.
Most people, when they think of the gold rush, they think of the miners with their pans and their rockers and their sluices. But really, that didn't last very long.
She says the era when people could easily find gold in California's rivers ended just a few years after the gold rush began in 1849. By the early 1850s, the surface gold, the easily accessible stuff, had pretty much all been found. So for today's would-be prospector, heading out to the river with a pan after watching a YouTube video, Ryan doesn't foresee an easy ride.
I don't see those people driving really expensive cars.
Over on the American River, I finally catch one of these elusive newbies in the act. And it's true, he's not in an expensive car.
My name is Camden and I'm 7 years old.
Camden Harbeck is panning for gold with his family. He says he hasn't found much yet, but it's fun.
Tell me why you like gold.
Because it's a lot of money.
Ooh. Let's say that if you found someone, you got some money, what would you want?
A Nintendo Switch.
A Nintendo Switch goes for about $200, which is to say about enough gold flakes to cover your pinky fingernail. So by the end of the summer, Camden might just reach his goal. But for the rest of the new prospectors out there, time will tell.
Californians who buy their health insurance through Covered California will see a rate increase in 2027. The insurance marketplace expects rates to increase by an average of nearly 10%. Individual costs will increase based on plan and location. Mono, Inyo, and Imperial counties are expected to see the highest rate change at nearly 15%. Covered California says the increase is partly due to the federal government failing to pass tax credits last year, and what it says are the increasing costs of healthcare.
Zephyr News is produced by Trevor Parks, Lorenz Weissel, and KZFR volunteers. Listeners may send tips for stories to news@kzfr.org or by using the Submit a Story icon on kzfr.org. This program is made possible by the financial support of listeners like you. You can support KZFR's journalistic endeavors by visiting kzfr.org/donate. Subscribe to Zephyr News on your favorite podcast platform and share your thoughts on social media. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next week.